Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Cindy DeFerdinand, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, alongside, at least electronically, alongside the great Cindy DeFerdinand.
Thank you, Bruce. How are you today?
I am well. It's Valentine's
Happy
Day.
Happy Valentine's Day, everyone.
Yes. I know it's a time of the year where people in California get colds.
Yes, I have a cold, in case everybody thinks somebody else joined the radio show today.
We just got to get that out there. Yeah.
I thought it was just from talking too much, but apparently it's not. So, although I still talk too much, even though I got a cold. Want to wish everybody happy Valentine's Day. Today we have a guest on the show. We're going to invite in a little bit later Debbie Levine, who built a career as a social worker and does private practice therapy. We'll get to know her a little bit, also certified as a coach. And, you know, I thought it would be fun also, and we'll ask Debbie as well when we get a little bit of her history and her thoughts about some of the differences between therapy and coaching. The coaching profession draws a lot of therapists, and some of them use it in practice. Some of them do, you know, private coaching as well as therapy. But it's always interesting to get their perspective and point of view. And then I thought maybe we could ask her a little bit about, and maybe we can jump in now, Bruce, talk about different specialties of coaching. And, you know, I always say that when I teach coaching, no matter what field or niche you're working in, relationships typically come into play at some point, people's relationships and personal development. So I was just going to ask you, Bruce, you know, where does that play in terms of impacting your clients? And I know you deal more, just a lot of what you do is on the executive level, but you're also in private practice. How often do relationships, pros and cons issues, come up into play with your sessions?
Well, it always plays a role somewhere along the sessions, whether it be a coaching case or a psychotherapy or counseling case. So that always sooner or later becomes part of the process and part of the counseling. And I like to do a lot of systems work with my clients. And I think more so on the psychotherapy and counseling side, you know what I mean?
It comes up more.
Well, yeah. I mean, because there was some sort of a problem, you know what I mean? And that problem was of a nature that really did impact, you know, significant relationships in their family. Now, with the coaching and executive coaching, not so much. You know, that problem might be impacting the family, but especially with the executives, there's a little bit of a only a few times have I actually incorporated wives or spouses into the coaching paradigm. Usually the coachees want to get that taken care of before it makes an impact into those relationships.
Right. So typically that's their primary relationship is not a core issue or something that they're working on.
Right.
May get handled outside of your coaching relationship, maybe.
Right. So, but by gosh, now if it was a sexual harassment type of an issue, a sex addiction or inappropriate sexual behavior issue that resulted in betrayal of a relationship, betrayal of marriage and those things, then yes, you know, obviously it's going to be
discussed.
It's going to be on the plate. But on other things, it isn't. It is an important thing, and relationships are definitely a subset of of what we do. And actually, Cindy, interestingly, I was speaking with some executives of a firm I work with a lot. There were several C-suite executives that had hired coaches to deal with difficult relationships, work relationships. You know what I mean?
Which is a different type of relationship. Yeah.
But it is a relationship nonetheless.
Absolutely. Maybe not romantic necessarily.
No.
But definitely important to better communication and, you know, getting along with folks at work, right?
Right. Yes. So, yes. And on, you know, the other relationships I'm thinking of, you know, probably many of our listeners, and I know we have Facebook pages, and oh boy, there's several relationship coaches that I have as Facebook friends, and they are going to town today here on Valentine's
Day. Yes, yes.
Talking about relationships, but also self-worth if you don't have a significant other. And whew, boy, just a day to kind of shut down social media. I don't think we'll get a word in edgewise.
Today's the big play. You know, in my private practice, you know, I do obviously nutrition and wellness coaching and business coaching, executive coach, startup coaching. Where the relationship part comes into play is I kind of put it under the personal development category, because typically the reason it's coming up in a coaching session is if it's getting in the way, meaning they're trying to accomplish goals, they're trying to move forward, and these things are getting in the way. So whether it's learning to communicate better with their significant other or spouse or partner, or they are learning to set boundaries and limits, they're working on issues, you know, obviously that stem from their own personal stuff that they need to clear in order to pave the way for movement in the areas that they really want to work on. So that's usually how it comes up for me. I call them sidebar issues. I don't know if that's a good term, right, but that's what I use. I say these sidebar issues come up because they want to clear them and work through them so that they're out of the way for them to pay forward. And so that's typically how I see it. You know, I know that there are, like you said, people that focus on just strictly relationship.
Right. That's
not my practice.
Coaching. Yeah, boy, not mine either.
So we're not relationship experts.
We deal with relationships. We handle them. We facilitate them. That's a good one. We facilitate them. I think both of us aren't.
Yeah, the romantic relationship definitely comes up in sessions. You know, I've had people say, "Oh, you saved my marriage," but I'm just working through that with them. They're working through it so that it can become not the main issue in their life, so they can work on the things that they really want to work on.
Right. You know, and so yeah, I mean that's an issue, and I know our guest isn't on yet, but this will be a nice compare and contrast, because, you know, I'm a licensed psychotherapist and counselor, but the thing that got me into life coaching was the opportunity, an already existing opportunity, working with executives who then their command suggested that I, you know, go to a life coaching program and receive the certification and then become a full-blown executive coach to, I don't want to say rebrand, but kind of sort of rebrand myself to be a square peg, square hole experience in the
right,
in the corporate sphere. So in some respects, I'm going backwards. But so when our guest comes, it'll be interesting to see, you know, she also is a licensed psychotherapist with a social work background. I'm a licensed person with a counseling and psychology, clinical psychology background. So that indeed is just a little bit different than social work. So it'll be interesting to see when she comes on to see what attracted her. You know what I mean? What attracted her to go through
to
a coaching
path.
Program.
Mm-hmm. And also, who is she working with currently? What's her ideal clients? And how she might be using those coaching skills in her day-to-day private practice. You know, I think the coaching profession definitely draws a lot of people from the psychology background, and we talk a lot about the differences between the two fields. So I think that's really interesting to get her perspective as well.
Hello, this is Deborah.
Hey, there she is.
Hey, Deborah, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
Hi. Good. This is Bruce is online too with me. Okay. Welcome to the show.
Hi,
today.
Hello.
And we just want to first introduce you. Thank you so much for being with us today to our audience. This is Deborah Levine, and she has a private practice in Southern California. She has a background in social work and some equestrian work, and I think also is certified as a coach, and we're just kind of want you to tell us a little bit about your history, your experience, your background, maybe what led you to coaching. Was it because you were just intrigued, you wanted to build on your skill set? Do you use it in your private practice today? And then we're going to get into, you know, maybe what kind of clients you work with, and then maybe even touch on the relationship side if you do some relationship therapy, since, of course, it is Valentine's Day. Just feel free to tell us a little bit about your education, your work experience background, and what you're currently doing.
Okay, sure. Well, I kind of got a late start in social work. I first thought I was going to be a horse trainer, so I went to college and got a degree in horse husbandry. Believe it or not, there's actually something called horse husbandry. And because I always loved horses and have now incorporated that in my work. But then after getting married and raising four children, I decided to go back to school for social work, and I got my bachelor's degree and master's degree in social work at Cal State Long Beach. And from there, I started working for the County of Los Angeles, where I was I worked in child welfare. So I worked with children and families in adoption and foster care, and actually did that for 13 years, and then moved to the mental health field, where I did more of, you know, just therapy with families and children that have been impacted by, you know, foster care and adoption, because I wanted to delve deeper into the issues that people are dealing with. And in child welfare, you basically, child safety is your first and foremost priority.
Right.
And with mental health, it's more of, you know, the underlying issues that happen as a result of children and families being involved in the system. So that seemed very interesting to me. And during the course of my work with the county, I became licensed in 2009 as a licensed clinical social worker, and began a private practice on the side, working with some families, but mainly adults, doing adult mental health. And I've been doing that for a couple of years now. And also, like I said, I do some equine-assisted therapy, which is very much like coaching, actually, because, you know, we deal with people and what are some of the barriers that interfere with their daily functioning, or, you know, the things that they're keeping them from fulfilling their true potential. So, you know, it's very similar in a sense.
So in that area of your practice, do you find your coaching skills are most beneficial there from your certification program, that in the equine side of your business?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I really do believe that therapy and coaching, really, there's not really much of a difference between the two that I found. I mean, I think in therapy, we maybe delve into more of a person's past, because it significantly helps to understand, you know, and master the habits and feelings and thoughts that hold people back from achieving their most important goals. I really do that in therapy. So I think that as a therapist, you know, you basically use whatever works for that client. It's a very client specific type of work that I do. And I found that coaching was very helpful, because while it may not delve into a person's past as much, it really just looks into what is going on today, and you know, being primarily concerned with concrete changes in a person's real life and, you know, promoting their growth and improving their efficiency and productivity at work, overcoming inhibitions, resolving symptoms. So really in therapy and coaching, basically do the same type of thing. So I thought that I was interested in becoming a coach because, again, you know, I wanted to improve my skill set and just add new tools to the toolbox. Because that's always helpful to be open to learning and different perspectives. So I found it to be very helpful and incorporate both.
I think that was very well said. I think in the coaching profession, the difference is, you know, we're not licensed, so we don't practice therapy. Mm-hmm. We refer out for therapy. Mm-hmm. And we do talk a lot about just what you said. You deal more with the past or maybe traumatic situations, which is causing behavior currently, where a coach may get just underneath it. A therapist is going to get way underneath it, a little bit deeper and further to the past trauma. Bruce, would you agree with that?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. So. And there's different modalities of therapy. I mean, psychoanalytical therapy is just what you're talking about, where we really delve into the person's past. But there's other forms of therapy that's more concrete, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy, where we look at what are some of the thought patterns that are holding you back. And let's look at that. Let's challenge that. And it really works in a very, you know, working with behavioral modification and what's going on today and making some concrete changes in your actions that ultimately result in a change of your thinking pattern and a change of your perspective.
Right.
So there's different variations.
Yeah, I think cognitive is probably the closest thing, right?
In terms of, I would say so.
Coaching, yeah, I think so as well. How about you, Bruce? You feel cognitive therapy is probably the closest?
Oh, yeah.
In comparison? I mean,
definitely, we're using coaching techniques to gradually, you know, get our clients to perceive things possibly in a different light. If you change the way you think about something, if you change the way you perceive a situation, it'll change how you feel, and it can also change your actions on a situation. So,
you know, which changes the outcome.
What changes the outcome. So there's a lot of CBT type of gains that that are affected, you know, through a coaching process. I was just curious. I know that you know, you have a private, you know, you're practicing social work been working with kids and whatnot. What attracted you to get the coaching training? What was going on at that time that you thought maybe you wanted to get the training, the CPC coursework?
Well, I'm always looking to, you know, always in any profession, always looking to stay current and to improve your skill set, enhance your skill set. And so I was just curious to see how, you know, what's involved in coaching and how does that help people and how could I possibly incorporate that into my work in my private practice. So that was really what inspired me to go ahead and become certified there.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that you pointed out that the coaching seems more applicable to the equine therapy. Which maybe you can tell us a little bit more about that, so because some of the people listening may not quite understand what's involved in that.
Sure. With equine therapy, it's all on the ground. It's not actual horseback riding. We use horses as a therapeutic tool, so it usually involves a therapist and a mental and a horse professional. And basically, you're doing on the ground experiential exercises that are very metaphorical. So, for example, might be working with a group that has addiction issues. So they would come in and we have an arena and we have the horse. And typically, I mean, you can use several horses, but most of my work is with one single horse. And horses are very in the moment. And so they are very perceptive to people's moods. And they can pick up on that. So if you're feeling angry or tense, basically a horse can reflect that back to you. And so there's a lot of insight that a person gets from just being around the horse. And then we might set up and we'll talk about what are some of the barriers that are keeping you from being able to maintain a sober lifestyle. So let's lead the horse around. So we'll have the person maybe, we'll have props in the arena. So you know, whether they're combs or buckets or whatever, and we'll put them out there, and the person will place them in various locations and then walk the horse through the different barriers. And then we'll have the person talk about what those barriers are and what does it feel like to kind of walk through it. And if the horse is maybe resisting, does that reflect maybe something that you're feeling inside? So it's what happens.
Oh, that's very interesting.
We try to use it. Yeah, how does that reflect in your world outside this arena? And a lot of times, I mean, people come up with the most amazing insights about themselves that may take many hours in an office to do, but something about being outside and being with the horse, they really can gain so much from just one hour of doing that type of work.
You know,
so it's pretty exciting work.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. I was wondering, you know, do you, when you have a group or an individual that you're doing this type of mm-hmm. work with, do you explain what, like you just did for us, how perceptive the horses are, how they can mirror back what you're going through, your
yes.
feelings? Okay, so they're aware of that as they go in to the process.
Yes, absolutely. We do an introduction and we talk about how horses are intuitive and that basically they are prey animals, where we are more predator. The human being is a predator and horses are prey. So as a prey animal, you have to be very aware of your surroundings for your survival. So as a result of that, they're very intuitive and very perceptive of their surroundings, whereas a predator may be very goal-focused and kind of sort of have blinders on in a sense. They're moving towards their goal and may not be aware of some of the dangers around them, especially in addiction. We find that, you know, people take a lot of risks as a result of their addiction. And so, you know, we can learn from horses, and that's what we explain. And then we also, you know, run through a brief safety orientation with them so that they feel comfortable being in the arena with the animal.
Mm-hmm. Some people are afraid of horses, right?
Yes, we've had people that are afraid of horses, but and they have the option if they are too uncomfortable, they can just observe. But we found that most of the time they might start off that way, but then when they see other people interacting with the horses, they become more comfortable and decide to step in the arena and give it a try. And I'd say 98% of the time they're very happy and grateful that they did, and they gain
nice.
Something from it. So, yeah.
Nice.
But it is very similar to coaching in that sense. But it's, you know, we look at concrete issues and what's holding you back.
Right. So you have that sort
yeah.
of aha moment, the clarity,
exactly.
the breakthrough, that kind of thing. That's
exactly.
that's exciting. Yes. That's exciting.
Yeah.
It
really
sounds like you. Yeah, it sounds like you enjoy it, that you really enjoy that work.
I do. I really do. And to be able to incorporate my love for horses with my love for therapy and helping people, it just worked out perfectly. So
nice.
Again,
nice.
It's just another way to enhance your skill set as a therapist. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. And I like that you use it in the field of addiction, too. So where
mm-hmm.
maybe a breakthrough might happen there that may take a lot longer. In an office, like you said,
absolutely.
It may or may never happen. You know what I mean? Like
right,
the unexpected breakthrough could happen, which is always
exactly.
motivating. Yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. And we also do it with couples as well, because you can get a couple out there. And so it also helps in marriage counseling as well.
Okay. So since it's Valentine's Day and we're on the subject,
mm-hmm.
Maybe you can point to some comparisons between the in-office therapeutic model and the equine with couples, and maybe even the coaching model as it applies to a romantic relationship. Because we were talking earlier before mm-hmm. you came on that, you know, Bruce does counseling. He does a lot of executive mm-hmm. coaching. That primary romantic relationship is not the key focus. And in my work, it's not necessarily the key focus, but it often comes up as a sidebar issue that needs to be dealt with and cleared so that they can mm-hmm. move forward in the ways they want, that they're there to work on, you know?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So how does it work in a relationship with equine therapy? I guess that's most intriguing to me.
Well, again, it's basically using the same type of ideas, you know, just seeing, we do a lot of observation, so, and probably not very much talking, because we really believe that people have their own answers within, and how they behave and how they interact with each other gives them their own insight. It doesn't have to come from us.
Right.
So they might be in the arena together and you give them a task to walk a horse through a certain, you know, a certain course, and watching how they do that together. Are they a team? Do they communicate with each other? Is one trying to exert more power over the other?
Right.
And then basically when they do that, they realize, wow, you know, this is what happens in our relationship. You know, he always takes over and I just kind of have to follow. You know, that's an example. So they are able to see that just by working with the horse. Or maybe, you know, they realize that they really are a team. Like they confer with each other, and sometimes it's not even spoken. There's just this unspoken communication that that becomes very, you know, very present in the arena with the horse, and they're able to recognize that and appreciate that as well. And I do want to say, again, with horses, too, it's all about nonverbal communication, because obviously horses don't speak. And so what
except
is said
Mr.
is
Ed.
How a person behaves. Yeah, except Mr. Ed, yes. I haven't come across him again, but it is the fact that what a person says and how their body language can reflect something completely different. And so even just the body language with couples, when we see them together, just moving together, it shows, it gives you a lot of insight as to what the dynamics are in the relationship.
Interesting.
Without even having to say a word.
Now, do they get it, or do you have a review at the end, kind of a thing, an assessment at the end, or?
You know what, sometimes they get it, and sometimes actually, if we're working, it's usually more than one session. They might come back the next week or two and say, you know what, I didn't see how any of this was relevant, but after reflecting on it, they sort of have that aha moment later.
Right.
And I don't like to provide the answers for people, because like I said, I think people pretty much have they know themselves better and they have their own answers. They just have to have an opportunity to delve into it a little bit. And we just reflect back what we see and then let them come up with their own conclusions about it.
Okay. Interesting. That's very coaching like then. You're right.
Yes, exactly.
Very, very coaching like.
Yeah.
And how about
want to support them?
How mm-hmm. about in your private practice, is couples work or do relationships come up with your individual private practice clients?
Oh, yes, absolutely. With coaching, I do a lot of work with couples in therapy. And oftentimes, you know, if things are deeper than what can really be handled in a couple session, you know, oftentimes, you know, I might recommend that they get individual counseling and individual therapy for some unresolved issues from their past that
right.
could play into the dynamics of their relationship. So you kind of have to separate that and, you know, so therapy and being able to recognize that when you're working with couples is very important, because if they haven't worked on themselves, then they bring that into the relationship and just recreate the patterns, the dysfunctional patterns that they've had all their lives.
Right.
And so unless they can address that first, marriage counseling really doesn't do much good.
Exactly. So it's like you do a session together and then you do sessions separate. And what if one partner is unwilling to see their part in terms of they need individual?
That makes it difficult.
Yes.
That
I can imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, so, it definitely does. And I won't see them individually. If I'm working as a couples counselor, I would recommend an individual counselor for them, because it's really a conflict of interest to do individual counseling with couples.
Oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that to you, I mean, that, is that a norm in the therapy
yes.
world?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
It is. Yeah. Ethically, it's not appropriate to do that. So,
okay.
Because there might be some things that a person individually wants to share that they don't want their partner to really know about at that time.
Right.
With couples counseling, you really have to have a no secrets policy, so that if they do tell you something, it should be something they're willing to share with their partner in session.
Otherwise, it's like you're having a secret. Yeah, yeah, interesting.
Exactly. And that compromises trust.
Right. So mm-hmm. they would work individually with their therapist and then work with you as a couple.
Yes, exactly.
Good. How about in terms of coaching skills in private practice? Do you find that you've used, because I heard you say that, you know, it's more tools in the toolbox, so to speak, that learning the coaching model and the coaching skill set, which, you know, is about asking questions and trusting that your client has the answers. Do you find yourself using it in your practice, or do you consider referring out to coaches? I know a lot of therapists will refer out to coaches for particular cases. How does that play in your private practice? Well, like Bruce, you do both.
It hasn't been my experience to do that. It hasn't been my experience to refer out to coaches, at least not yet. I mean, I'm not saying that can happen, but... sometimes it depends on how a person will approach therapy. So they might want to just sort of have a more of a coaching model, because there's a lot of stigma attached to psychotherapy. And, you know, many people just accept it really under the rubric of coaching. So I might just approach it in a coaching manner and may just incorporate just coaching techniques that might be all that person may need.
Right.
But, so I'm really able to utilize coaching in my my therapy practice.
Okay, and so it's like you've integrated it in, the skills in. Okay.
Yes,
okay.
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Right.
That's interesting, because I know some people will, you know, do separate coaching than therapy, or mm-hmm. some therapists like yourself use the skill set to enhance their therapy depending on the client's needs. And then some, sometimes there's a coach in a practice that the therapists refer to, so that there is so that they the therapists do their work. When the client gets to a certain point, then they pass them on to the coach to do the forward, most of the forward focused goal setting and moving their life forward work. So I think there's different mm-hmm. ways out there. And I think it's an individual thing, you know, just like what type of coaching or therapy you do, it's an individual thing and how therapists are treating it. What do you see in your market, Bruce?
Yeah, I mean, it's sometimes there'll be some behavior-like things in the psychotherapy or counseling relationship, but I have full-on different paperwork for coaching. So I have coaching paperwork that doesn't, you know, adhere. You know, it's more just coaching paperwork that would be utilized in like what you've taught, or ICF type of coaching paperwork that really doesn't have the HIPAA stuff and all the other stuff. You know,
right,
so for my counseling and psychotherapy, I actually have another set of paperwork that has more of a clinical intake, more you know, family history, psychosocial informed consent, limits of confidentiality. All the different types of things to sign off on. So that's a little bit more, obviously, clinically and more invasive, more pointed, serious paperwork if somebody is wanting that. So there have been executive clients that will not, you know, to your point, you know, that they will not enter into a counseling or psychotherapy relationship because they're just not going to sign. They don't want the stigma. They don't want that kind of a paper trail. And then they'll ask me, hey, can I see you as a coaching client, and maybe we can address some of these issues through the coaching paradigm and not have this other kind of a paper trail.
Following them. Yeah.
Right.
Because you have private practice, Bruce, as well as the executive coaching, what you've done is separate the two versus integrate some of the skills into a therapeutic model. Because, you know, if you're doing therapy, you're adhering to rules and regulations according to the license that you have. Whereas if you're coaching, you're coaching, you know, and as a coach and not, I don't have a therapy or a psychology background. I certainly cannot practice therapy where both of you can, you know, because you're licensed to. So I think that's the distinction is that I guess you have the prerogative and the pleasure, each of you individually, to integrate it in or separate it out. But when I teach coaching and I certify new coaches, it's very imperative that they understand that they need to refer out to any issues that are designated for a therapist, you know, because therapists, you know, diagnose, you know, there's certain things you guys are licensed to do that, you know, it's illegal if I do it, you know what I mean? So I think that's important to say I'm saying that for our audience, not because you two don't understand that, because I know you do, but I just think it's interesting how people in the therapy world may handle it a little bit different depending on the business that they're doing. And interesting, Deborah, that you said equine is so much more similar to coaching, which at first, I was like, oh, that's interesting. I was trying to figure that out. And then you explained it so beautifully that I really got it, because the horse thing is so nonverbal. It's almost like the horse is acting like a coach, too. And sort of.
Absolutely. The horse is the coach. Yeah.
Yeah. I loved how you said in the end, you guys say what you saw, but you're not leading with conclusions or suggestions or advice. So it's very much more coaching than therapy. That's what I
very
saw
much so.
What you said.
Yeah, very much so.
Very interesting, because I didn't know a lot. Bruce, you come from Texas.
It's like the horse is a projective, you know, or the catalyst that brings about the, you know what I mean, the experience. And then you're asking that person in almost a Jungian dream analysis, well, what do you think that meant, you know, and
exactly
stuff like that. So, yeah, that's pretty cool. Exactly. That it's almost like a projective experience, but it's experiential and those things, and it's mediated through the horse and not necessarily a gestalt type of technique or something else. So I think it's always it's always pretty cool. You know, a neighbor-minded sand tray therapy, and I'd step in the damn thing, come in the office with sand, like, what the hell is this shit here? Person's a social worker, and just, you know, nothing wrong with that, obviously, but with the kids and doing sand tray therapy, and a lot of kids will express themselves through play. You know what I mean?
They'll
be playing, and they'll express their issues through play, and the playing is the mediating factor here, and they'll really disclose whatever trauma or issue or whatever is on their mind. So, no, it does have merit and value, but that's when you can't get a horse in the office in Dallas. bust out the other modalities. Yeah. But anyway.
I would expect you could find a horse in Texas, though, Bruce.
Oh, yeah. You can. You just got to go outside here in the city in Dallas. They're nearby. You just have to
find them.
Go a little ways to get to
get out to the get out to
traffic.
The ranch, so to speak.
Yeah,
right?
But they're here. But I think that's really good. And you can incorporate. You know, there are situations where you can incorporate coaching techniques inside of a psychotherapy or counseling paradigm. Just got to be really careful, you know, because coaching is coaching and psychotherapy is psychotherapy. But there are some. You know, there's crossover in any kind of a humanistic client-centered technique, right? I mean, you know, Carl Rogers and the coach listen to their clients and might reflect back to the client what they're feeling. Doesn't mean like, oh, are you practicing psychotherapy right now? I heard you do some reflection there on the client. You know, some of those things are kind of now good universal, you know, communication strategies as being proprietary therapy techniques. So but if I'm gonna have somebody talk to the empty chair, whoa, watch out, it's Fritz Perls, it's gestalt time.
The empty chair, you know what, in the curriculum of coaching, I think the part that the students may feel like they're doing therapy more is when you start getting in the area of what's holding a client back, the perceptions, the thoughts, the false beliefs, the fears, those types of things that you can work through in a lighter way. I call it getting just underneath it. But that is usually the area that if people think, oh, they're going to probe deep, you know, but you don't probe deep. It's not about something that happened in your past necessarily. It's like, what is that perception, that thought, that block that's that you're aware of that's holding you back? And let's see if we can't talk about that, become aware of it, and try to move it to the side or get rid of it, you know, but not, you know, lay down on the couch and do therapy because we're not trained for that.
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, or you know, if it's something that is so deep, you know, like you said, you refer out, or sometimes I've even referred out. I've had trauma cases that were so eaten up with their trauma, I'd, you know, refer out to a PTSD person or an EMDR,
right,
you know,
right,
person,
right.
just to like, man, I'm just, you know, I'm not even scratching the surface here, and they really got to clear away some things. Or had a coaching client, wanted coaching, but the husband had been diagnosed with a horrendous neurological condition, and she just needed to go through some kind of grief and loss work, you know, I mean,
right,
being there, being present, whatever.
Right.
But basically, I'll be honest with you, I was doing grief work. I was just being there, being present, listening, being supportive. And then, you know, what do you think your options are? What do you think you want to do now? Okay. And who's there to help you? Is there anything anybody can do, anyone can do to assist you? You know, some really good old-fashioned, I don't want to say Kubler-Ross type of stuff, but, you know, good old-fashioned grief work. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, once that kind of got to a workable paradigm and the person's condition had stabilized at whatever point, then we could do the work and march through some goals and whatnot. But anyway, so it just,
no, I think it's important that you mentioned that, Bruce, that some, you know, we refer out when we don't have the training or expertise, because it's all about the client, for the benefit of the client. So, you know, obviously it's really clear cut. I mean, it seems clear cut to me as a coach, when I need to refer out to therapy or make sure somebody is working with the therapist. And, you know, I know those situations, and it's sometimes it's a gut level thing too. It's not as overt, but knowing when we're out of our league, so to speak, I think it's important that we get the people the help they need.
And I think one of the advantages...
Go ahead.
Sorry, I'm overcoming a cold, so I apologize. But one of the advantages of being a therapist and having the coaching skills is that we can start off maybe lighter and looking at the barriers. And then when I find there's a need to delve deeper, then I can switch to some more therapeutic tools and,
right,
and use that. So it has an advantage that in that way. And I wanted to mention, too, when you were talking about the difference in paperwork, a lot of times I see insurance clients. And so insurance pays for therapy. I don't think insurance pays for coaching. And
no.
So it's very sort of pathology. Is that the word? Pathology oriented. So we have to have a diagnosis in order to bill for insurance. And for a lot of people, you know, that's like you were saying, Bruce, you know, they don't want to have that paper trail. They don't want to have that attached to their name. And so you know, but we have to diagnose as therapists in order to be able to justify billing insurance companies. And so it's coming, you know, it's approaching the client where there's something wrong with you, basically.
Right,
you know, as
right.
opposed to life coaching where you are healthy, you're just needing some guidance and support, walking through some, you know, challenges here and there. So,
yes. Yes, very well said.
Really,
I think coaching is different in that way. There's not something wrong with you. We're not assuming that you're unhealthy.
Right.
We're assuming you have all the answers. You just need a partner and a facilitator to walk through it with you and hold you accountable and remind you of what
sure.
you want and where you're going. It's more future focused and
yes.
solution
yes,
focused,
definitely.
Goal focused. It's definitely all about where you want to go. You're here
right.
and now you want to go there, where it doesn't draw so much from past experience. We don't talk a lot about
mm-hmm.
that in coaching,
mm-hmm.
you know, unless there's a, you know, something is blocking the movement forward, then we bring it up. And then if it's too deep, they got to, you know, they have to work it out with the therapist. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Of course,
mm-hmm.
they're not always willing
yes.
to do that. So that can be problematic.
Yes, definitely. But I mean, I think overall what people want is that they just want someone to listen, You know, that's really the bottom line for people. They just want to be heard. And that in itself, whether you call it coaching or you call it therapy, it's what people need in order for them to be able to have some kind of motivation to move forward and
through something
that they listen to.
Right. Well, you have such a soothing voice. I'm like closing my eyes and listening to you. So I'm imagining people come to talk and hear your voice, you know, that sort of soothing, everything's going to be okay.
Everything's going to be fine.
Everything is going to be fine. Most of the time we know that. But when we're going through it, we question it. You know what I mean?
Of course.
Even if we know on a gut level from our experience that we're going to get through it, it's challenging moving through it. Mm-hmm. So having somebody to bounce things off, whether it's a therapeutic model or a coaching model, is a huge, huge need for people. Because I always say, how many people do you know in your life that will listen to you and make it all about you for an hour? Like,
not
really?
Very many.
No, I mean, it goes back and forth, maybe 5 minutes till they roll their eyes. You know what I mean? Something in your personal life. But, you know, a coach or a therapist, I mean, they're really there for you. It's your hour, you know, and it's very beneficial to have somebody like that listening.
Oh, absolutely. It's just it's more than half the battle right there.
It's just being
there.
Know?
And it's just being there. Exactly. Being present. Being client focused, what does this person need right now, you know, and just be present in that moment.
Yeah, it's nice. Good feeling. Mm-hmm. Well, we so appreciate you coming on today, Deb. Thank you for your time.
Well, I really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much
for having me.
Would you mind, before you go, and you know, we have a few minutes to conclude the show, would you mind letting people know how you can be reached for private practice? So that anybody out there listening that says, wow, I want to do that equine therapy, or I really like her style, can reach out to you.
Mm-hmm. Well, they can go to my website. It's Deborah Levine Counseling. And on the website, it shows the different types of work that I do, including the equine therapy. And they're welcome to call. Oh, I can give you my email address if that is helpful, or my phone number.
However you'd like to be contacted, phone number, whatever's easiest for you.
Sure. But probably both my phone number.
Okay.
And it's 714-319-1897.
Thank you so much, and have a very happy Valentine's Day.
Oh,
thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. Take care.
Thank
you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so I thought that equine therapy thing was really interesting. I got to tell you.
Oh, yeah.
In the way she related it, its similarities to that's why I love having these guests on, because you learn so much from them. Very interesting that she felt like it emulated the coaching model better than a therapeutic model. I thought that was very interesting.
And I know that, you know, people use aquatic therapy with dolphins and porpoises for autistic and spectrum kids, and there's something about the, you know, that experience that really does well for that population. So yeah, you know, it seems a little bit off the beaten path, but there's a lot of research and articles to support the validity of that type of work with certain types of situations. So so that's quite the gamut, from coaching to equine assisted therapy. You know,
yeah. So, and it's interesting.
Gotta get that horse to set some goals for us. That's for sure. Yeah.
If the horse could talk,
have the
right?
horse come on the show. I know. Man, no, I'm not making it. But anyway, good stuff though. Actually, good stuff nonetheless. So, you did good, even though you have a little bit of a cold. You sounded you got to your regular self there. I got
hand
it to you.
Make it through.
Skip a beat.
Well,
oh,
interesting guest. I'm really grateful she came on today. I love the comparison between coaching and therapy in private practice and equine therapy, like, you know, how diverse, but how she pulls that all together to make it work for her based on her client's needs. I mean, I'm thinking she's the perfect combination of skills. You know what I mean?
She absolutely.
Right? And like, wowza.
She's a great combination. And
Yeah.
And most of our guests have their unique, like I said, very unique skill sets that they've acquired, and then applying it to their wheelhouse and their population that really identifies with them. So it's that's what it's all about here on the Concierge Coaches Show, is bringing coaching techniques and other great ways of communication to our listeners. So,
and Bruce, yeah, I know you'll get the podcast out to Debbie so she can pass that on to her.
Oh, yeah.
Her circle.
And folks, the podcast is on iTunes, and I will leave the iTunes link on our Facebook page as well. Also, you can look at it on, or listen to the, and download our shows on iTunes, as well as the latalkradio.com channel 2 site for the Concierge Coaches Show. Our shows are archived
at noon
for your pleasure, and you can get them at any time. So well, I'll go ahead and start the sign off. So, folks, once again, another great episode here on the Concierge Coaches Show at LA Talk Radio. And I can be reached at conciergecoach.net. And Cindy, what's your contact?
WisdomFoods, all one word, .com. Or you can reach me by phone, 714-943-6206. And we're available. Any questions, anything we can do to help lead you in the right direction, please reach out to Bruce or I. And I hope everybody has a fabulous Valentine's Day today.
See y'all next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Cindy DeFerdinand, only on LA Talk Radio.